streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, in studio, all three of us together. For the first time, I actually am looking across a table at Will Nault. Usually, that's just a dead space. Once in a while, Logan will sit there. But Will and I and Logo all together in the Iconic studio today, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls Maintenance. It's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. Yesterday, Will, you got to, at the very least, you could like avert your gaze. You were sitting beside me. You didn't have to look at me the entire time. Today, you got no choice. Like, I'm right in front of you, bud.
I'm not looking at you, though.
Yeah, it's true. People, you can like, know. You even if there's nothing on that monitor, like I wouldn't know. You'd be able to just
it's black. It's actually black right now. I'm not even looking at anything.
And you could pretend like that you're like, oh yeah, this I'm just doing some research here. It just, could just be your way of not looking at me, which I don't blame you. I could absolutely get on board with. It's cool to be back. It's cool to be back downtown. Things feel normal. There's Stampede paintings everywhere. People are wearing cowboy hats. It's almost like the last year and a half didn't happen. It's cool to see, and it's good to have everybody back in studio. Logo on the ones and twos. I'm Pat. He's Will. And the Minnesota Wild actually did it. They actually bought out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter today. I was stunned. I wondered if they were going to do Parise just because that guy was barely playing and he was a healthy scratch, in and out, so on and so forth. But 8-year buyouts for both players with millions left on their deals. They each had 4 years left, which means the buyout goes 8 years. That is a massive financial commitment, boys, and a massive impact on their cap going forward. But Will, as you said, when we were talking about this off the air, like Bill Guerin, the general manager in Minnesota, Bill Guerin does not screw around. Whether you think it's right or wrong, he does not have any gray area, and if he thinks it's the right move, he's doing it, and there's no question about it. And today is a perfect example of just that.
Yeah, and he's come in there and essentially, you know, done a lot of things that have raised eyebrows, have questioned whether or not he could do this job. And
yeah.
I think a lot of things went right for the Minnesota Wild last season, and some of that was obviously his button pushing, but ever since he's gotten there, he has not wasted any time to put his fingerprints on this team. One of the first deals he made involved his old club in the Pittsburgh Penguins, with the Galchenyuk trade, and he traded Jason Zucker to Pittsburgh. Obviously, Galchenyuk didn't stay there very long, but that's a guy that has gone in there and has made an immediate impact. He's made some huge moves, and this is just another one of those where, you know, this is a conversation that I think would be incredibly tough with ownership. We talked yesterday about why the buyout window has been kind of quiet and the economics around the league right now. Yes, these owners are incredibly rich, but still to go there and say, hey, I want to buy out 4 years of these contracts and not just for one guy, for two. That's a very tough conversation to have. Yeah. But I think after having the season he had, some of the moves that he's made, as I mentioned, that have worked as well as they have, I think there is that trust with ownership and there's the belief that he knows what he's doing. And let's be perfectly honest. I mean, this is a guy who has learned the trade for quite some time and did it for a long time in Pittsburgh under one of the greatest GMs in this league's history. And he's taken some of that now to his own practice. And this Minnesota Wild team is now his, Pat. This is no question
doubt
that this is his squad. And I don't think they are done. They've got a lot of cap space and there still is the looming question of, is Matt Dumba a member of their team come October?
Well, and it's yeah, absolutely. And that seems like one that is very much up in the air. In terms of cap savings and how this works out for them, just based on
AAV's like a roller coaster
bonus, it really is. They get a ton of cap relief this year on each guy, about $5 million per. So they've got about $10 million of cap space that opens up for next season. That goes down to $2 million of savings for the next year. And then they get virtually no cap savings. Each guy for the 23-24 and 24-25 season counts $7.3 million against the cap, just dead space. That's more than $14 million of dead space that'll be on their cap for those two seasons because of these buyouts. Here's Bill Guerin today, general manager of the Minnesota Wild.
And by the way, if you're wondering, their original cap hits are 7.5.
Yes.
So it's almost like they're still on the roster for those 2 years.
Exactly. It's almost 100% like that. Here's Guerin today talking about why he did this, the decision, and how they came to it.
We feel we have a good culture, and it keeps getting stronger. And you know what? I I think it will continue to get stronger. This wasn't one of those things. This is all about just, like I said, just moving forward as a group.
What both, though?
Well, we just felt that it was the proper step. I mean, you know what? We'll definitely get some cap relief this summer. You know, after that, it'll be a little bit more difficult. But we just felt like doing both was the right time.
How long have you been considering buying out Ryan and his contractor? When did that process start for you?
I didn't just wake up this morning and try to decide to do it. It's been a process, probably about 6 or 8 months. And there's been a lot of discussions, a lot of conversations over it, and on both of them. And, you know, we know how much they've meant to this team and to this city. So, like I said, these are not great choices to make. These are not great decisions to make, but you have to make them. And you stand by it. And, that's it.
So here is my question. That's Bill Guerin today after buying out Parisien and Suter. So it's not even a question so much. Here's what's kicking around my head, guys. And that is, this feels like a move, even listening to Bill Guerin speak about it there, it feels like a move that a team makes when they believe that they are ready to take that next step and compete for a Stanley Cup. And I know Minnesota had a great year. They were one of the big feel-good surprises of this shortened season. They pushed Vegas to 7 in that first-round playoff series. But I don't know, and this is why I'm skeptical about these decisions. They're getting that $10 million of cap space for next year because it feels like they want to go all in and build on that. I don't even know, going back to the old divisions, if that's a surefire playoff team for next year. And that's why I am skeptical of Minnesota's move. I don't look at them, Will, as a team that is ready to win a Stanley Cup or compete for a Stanley Cup next year. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe what they did this year was actually legit and they are ready to do so. But that's why I'm having a lot of trouble with this decision and the fact that in 2 years' time, they are absolutely screwing themselves when it comes to their cap management.
Yeah, that's the part that is hard to defend when you look at the way that the cap relief goes and years 3 and 4, it is like they're just there. But I disagree in terms of a team that feels they are in a spot to win a Stanley Cup. I do think they are a franchise that wants to take the next step, almost similar to what we talk about in Calgary. This is a Minnesota team that has a lot of trouble getting out of round one. Mm-hmm. And you heard in that clip, it wasn't necessarily about cap or about winning a cup. It's about changing the culture. And I always kind of, you know, hate to keep bringing it back to Calgary, but we just talked yesterday about Mark Giordano's future. And I think those conversations, you heard Bill talk about it, they've been mulling over this for 6 to 8 months. That's a very hard decision to make. And they feel like there is a need for a culture change in that locker room. And they feel these are two guys that, you know, right or wrong, are getting pinned as guys that need to be removed from the situation. And you look at that Central Division next year, you can't tell me St. Louis is a guaranteed playoff team. You can't tell me the Dallas Stars are a guaranteed playoff team. The Avalanche are the one that sticks out to there. We're going to get to Nashville later today, but they're a team that's turning over a new leaf. What are they going to be? Chicago, we all believe, is not going to be ready to make a jump to a playoff spot. And then there's the Winnipeg Jets. You can't tell me that Minnesota can't be in that top three. And I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but if they continue to take steps the way that they did this year, and, you know, you have to take into account that, yes, more than half their games were against a very weak California. But I still think this is a team that is wanting to take that next step. This is a hard decision because, again, a lot of it for me is not about competing immediately. It's about changing your culture and changing the look and the makeup inside that locker room. You and I aren't inside that room. We don't know what it's like. But that's the feel I get from that clip. And they made a new decision for a captain this year with Jared Spurgeon. I think there's a lot of talk, again, about a guy that's been there for a long time and has worn a letter in Matt Dumba. I just think it's about culture. And so, you know, interesting to see what they do in the immediacy with all that cap space. And as Bill said, I think it's going to be tricky in years 3 and 4 that you don't burn yourself. But that to me is what this is about. And I look at that Central, and Pat, they might have the most uncertainty next season than any other division in the NHL.
Yeah, there's one team that you know is going, and that's Colorado. And I'm not saying Minnesota can't be a playoff team. I don't see them as a team that you say, okay, well, next year they're going to be a cup contender. They're a team that, you know, lots of preseason pundits are going to be picking to win the Stanley Cup. And that means nothing. I get that. I don't see them as a group that says, yes, this team is ready to compete for a cup next year. And from a cap standpoint, that's where they're getting their most immediate benefit is for their cap management that in this coming year. And they've got a Kaprizov deal to figure out, and that's going to be really interesting to see how this impacts that. They have a Matt Dumba situation to figure out, and who knows? Maybe this is a team that goes hard in free agency and looks elsewhere in that regard. And this comes strictly from the way I've always been worried about the cap situations. We have never seen anything like this before. For a team to have essentially $15 million of completely dead weight on their salary cap for those two seasons, does it almost not put them in a spot where they've got now a window of 2 years where they can truly do something? I don't know. How do you compete when $15 million is going to nothing, even if the cap goes up that season?
It's true. And that's, you know, that was the point I was going to make. It's not going to go up by $10 million, but I do think by this third season, it's going to go up probably 3 or 4.
Yep.
And that's going to be nice, but I'm with you. The same way we've had conversations about how do you compete when you've got, whether it's 2, 3, sometimes 4 if you're Toronto, when you've got guys eating $10 million of cap space, how do you have an opportunity to compete? Yeah. And when those two guys aren't even on the ice, yeah, that's really, really tough. So I'm with you. I think you look at it and say, you've got a 2-year window here to really push. That's the length of the remainder of Cam Talbot's contract. Who knows what that Kaprizov deal is going to look like? Is it going to be long-term? Is it going to be short-term? If you're Bill Guerin, you're going to try everything to do long-term so that you don't have a situation where it's a 2-year deal and then you're trying to sign him to a monster deal while you've got $14 million of dead cap space. Yeah. So very curious, and I do think it is almost a 2-year window, but now you see, you know, what type of impact do they have on this year's free agent class. There's some big names out there. They've got the ability to spend, and Minnesota is a spot where I do think players would like to go. So we'll see. Again, this for me is all about culture. It is awful when you think about the cap penalties in year 3 and 4, but that's what I look at it and say. And you know, we'll see what happens here with the expansion draft. They might lose another guy.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that's, you know, a situation where they get even more cap relief.
So now the question becomes,
by the way, just quickly, I'm surprised more on Suter. I think we 100%. All knew this on Parise, a guy that, you know, was healthy scratch for a handful of games, barely played in the playoffs. And what, had 18 points in the regular season. So that the fact of doing both is certainly shocking.
Suter, third on the team in the regular season with 22-11 of ice time behind Brodin and Dumba. In the playoffs, though, this, I think, gives you a pretty good idea of how important Suter was to that team. Led the team in those 7 games against Vegas with more than 24 minutes per game for Ryan Suter. This guy can still play. I think Parise can still play, but you know, you felt a whole lot better about $7.5 million for Suter than you did at $7.5 million for Parise, which leads me to the next question. What does the future hold for these guys? They're getting paid, you know, millions or just under, I think in terms of real money, it's about just under $1 million they're getting in terms of paychecks every July 1st going forward. But what type of interest is there for Parise if he is willing to sign an NHL minimum deal with a contending team? Does Ryan Suter still get a 2 or a 3 year deal in free agency at a much lower cap hit? I am fascinated to know what type of interest there is on these two guys going forward. Somebody just got an email. Do they?
It's me, and I don't know how to turn off these sounds because I haven't been here in 10 years. And
it was actually Pat.
That was me. No, I didn't get an email. Unless they've changed things around on this computer.
They have.
Oh, good. All right, well, I'll fix that in the break.
Hi, Luke.
So, do we see, like, does Parise play next year? I think Suter 100% is playing somewhere next year.
I think Parise, he does.
Does Parise play next year?
I think the question is he willing to take a league minimum deal? Or even, too, we've seen this before, and it kind of sounds a little bit crazy, but is he a guy that's also willing to take a PTO?
Man. From $7.5 million.
And I only say that because of the flat cap and with a lot of teams, you know, kind of waiting. He's going to have to wait. There's no question. But if he's willing to play for $800,000, I think he'll play. But the question is he willing?
Yep. What do we got on the text line? 960-960.
Because I ain't paying that guy more than that.
No, I think Parisi's the perfect Jason Spezza or Joe Thornton or Wayne Simmons type situation that Toronto did. I know there's the picture going around of Parisi wearing the Maple yeah. Leafs hat. That's an American guy. Maybe he does go, maybe it's a Chicago, maybe it's a somewhere in the Midwest. I mean, he's from that area, the Minnesota area, but maybe he ends up going somewhere else. As for Suter, I know that we're not talking about a guy who is young, but we're still talking about a guy that can play and can play pretty decently. So he would be 36 years old. He'll turn 37 in January. I would right now, if I'm a team that needs some blue line depth, hell, if I'm the Calgary Flames and I lose Mark Giordano in the expansion draft, I'd think about signing Ryan Suter to a 2-year deal at $2.5 million or something like that.
He's got family ties to the old Flames.
He
too.
Does. His uncle is probably the second or third best defenseman to ever play. Now you could have both Suter guys, the nephew and the uncle. If they were to lose Gio in the expansion draft, I would be all over the Flames signing Ryan Suter if he'd had any interest in doing that.
Yeah, the question's always, do these guys want to play in Canada? And we've talked, I think it was the 2 weeks you were gone, Pat. It's the whole Canada thing is a fascinating topic because you even have Canadian players that don't want to come back
absolutely.
And play in Canada. And, for me, for a guy off a buyout, I don't know if that's a spot Suter wants to put himself in. I think he'd rather go to Florida where there's two reporters and he doesn't have to worry about anything. But, yeah, that is a great question. Obviously, would be a direct replacement. You look at the salary cap in Calgary. You've got Giordano making over $6 million. Suter would come in at probably around 1.5. You're kind of in a way better shape in that regard. And I think the team and knowing who their head coach is, yeah, I think they would be all over that.
So this reads that cap penalty will be gross. I did not think they'd buy out both. That comes from Matt and Cochran. I really hope they intentionally waited a few days to announce this just to screw over the Oilers,
so.
Who probably would have went for Suter in free agency and might not be able to now. Wild buying out Parise makes sense, but Suter, I wonder if there were locker room issues or off-ice issues there. Either Suter was an asshat and or he was butthurt. His BFF, Parise, was healthy scratched. Agree or disagree? I don't know. Suter is definitely getting a multi-year deal. Parise will get a nice, cheap one-year deal somewhere. And somebody suggests Parise and Suter fitting in with the Avalanche for a cup run. Could definitely see it with Suter. We'll see what happens.
The Avalanche have their own problems.
They do. They've got some cap situations that they got to figure out going forward because they're in a spot where
they can't be signing a Ryan Suter, sorry.
And they got a game plan for McKinnon's deal. They got to figure out what's happening with Landeskog. Anyway, it was surprising news. I don't think anybody saw both getting bought out. Parise, sure. Parise and Suter. Yeah, I don't know. Montreal's re-upped head coach Dominique Ducharme for 3 more years. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. Full-time head coach. I just continue to be pretty amazed at how that narrative changed. I don't know what the narrative was inside the Montreal boardroom. I just know what we were saying, how I was feeling about that guy. Those 2 months, 2.5 months down the stretch where Montreal could not get out of their own way and they were limping, it felt like, you're like, geez, is Ducharme even going to be the head coach next year? Then all of a sudden they go on the most incredible Stanley Cup run. They're playing in game 5 of the Stanley Cup final and the narrative has changed 100%. But the thing about Montreal is, and I was talking to Logo, and I know you guys addressed this last week, I'm kind of with you guys. I'm even more, I said Minnesota, not a surefire playoff team next year. I'm more confident in Minnesota being a playoff team than I am in Montreal being a playoff team next year. That division, those teams that they're going to be playing against, I don't know how you can sit here and say for sure that Montreal is back in the postseason next year. So taking nothing away from Dominique Ducharme, it's just that's the stark reality of the whole situation. Bringing it back is the right call for sure. I just, what are the actual fair expectations for that team next year?
It's a great question. I think unlike the Minnesota conversation, their division is one that I would not want to be a part of. You've got Tampa, Boston, Toronto, Florida, Buffalo, Ottawa, and Detroit. The latter three teams, yeah, you can probably say they safely finish ahead of those. Panthers look like a team that's continuing to be on the rise. Their head coach, with some uncertainty, he's staying in Joel Quenneville. Toronto, well, you might have some jokes about their play in the playoffs. They're still a very you know, for me anyway, surefire playoff team. And Tampa and Boston, Tampa's got their own problems, and they're still going to try everything they can for a three-peat, and I have no reason to believe they're not in the playoffs, and the same thing goes for Boston. Yep. So I think they're incredibly in tough, and that's not trying to be disrespectful. Like, let's not forget that Montreal was the second team ever in NHL history to go pointless in their last five regular season games and make the Stanley Cup final. It just doesn't happen.
Yep.
And we've seen magical runs before. Hell, the team that was a Stanley Cup finalist last year didn't even make the playoffs this year, and that's the Dallas Stars. I'm not going to sit here and say they're a surefire playoff team. In fact, I do think they are a long shot to make it, and I'm completely uncertain on Dominic Ducharme as a head coach. I really am. And Logan and I talked about this. It's a slam dunk. You could not go away from him after what they did.
No.
But that doesn't mean he's a great coach and he's going to be there for the next 10 years. I'm incredibly skeptical. Like, let's not forget they were down 3-1 in round one to Toronto and were one shot away from going home in five games.
Yeah.
And their entire fan base and a lot of the league media was saying that their GM and head coach were on the hot seat. Then they go on this unbelievable run led by their goaltender, and all of a sudden it's the greatest team ever assembled?
Yeah.
I have a hard time buying into that.
Well, you take a look at their division, right? You went through the division, and it's bang on. Like, I look at Boston, I look at Toronto. I think in that division, Montreal is probably...
I don't think they make it.
They're the fifth best team for me. I think Boston, Tampa, Toronto, Florida, I look at them all better. Okay, so then you go back into the wild card situation. Well, I take a look at the other division. You know, Washington may not be the powerhouse, but they're still a playoff team. Philadelphia, they are probably in line for a bounce back season, depending on what
they're
going to
make some massive changes.
Penguins aren't going anywhere. Carolina's on the rise. The Islanders are on the rise. Like, I just don't know.
Rangers are on the rise.
They got to be better than three teams in their division or seven teams overall to make the playoffs. I don't. My math is off as per usual, but you know what I'm saying. Like, they to me are like the ninth or tenth best team in the Eastern Conference.
They were the 18th best this year.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about?
Well, and here we are giving the Habs no credit once again. That's all we did in their postseason run. But we were right. As we told you, Islanders don't win Stanley Cups. They were a goal away from going to the Stanley Cup final. Montreal can't win a cup with a team like that. They were in the Stanley Cup final in Game 5. But, yeah, I think they're in tough to be a playoff team.
I still don't know how that series went 5, but anyways.
I'm with you. I still don't know how Montreal beat Vegas. I really don't. The other two, sure, inside the division. But to beat Vegas, that was the one that was truly impressive. Dominic Ducharme is back. More on that coaching decision. How much of a decision really was it? And a whole lot more from around the NHL. Our boy, Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports, joins us around the corner. Big show's underway on a Tuesday. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Steinberg and Nault along with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's take you on a spin around the NHL. Lots happening today, including some coaching news in Montreal, a massive decision in Minnesota, retirement to Nashville. Lots to touch on with our good friend Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports, who joins us on the program this afternoon down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, Ren. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm pretty good.
It's good to have you on. It's always good to catch up. I have to imagine, my friend, that Dominic Ducharme getting that three-year contract extension, that is the least surprising news for you in a long time.
Yeah, well, you know what? It was all about, is it going to be 4 years or only, a 3-year contract. So now we know. So it's going to be interesting to see what's next, obviously, because Luke Richardson needs to sign a contract. Same for Alex Burrows and Sean Burke. So we'll see how it's going to turn out for that coaching staff. But I believe that everybody's going to be back. Maybe there's some question marks with Sean Burke because his family is living in Arizona. And I know that Dominic Ducharme wants another coach behind the bench with him. So, yeah, there's still plenty of news coming out from Montreal regarding the coaching staff. And don't forget that they need a coach now in the AHL.
What is your gut on the future of both Burrows and Richardson?
Oh, they're going to be back. No doubt about that. I mean, you know, if you look at the way Luke worked with Dominic over the years, you know, they work pretty well together. So, I mean, Luke is a man who, you know, if you look at the penalty killing during the playoffs, if you look at the way that these were playing together, there's no doubt that, you know, Mark Bergevin is going to try everything to bring it back. Alex Burrows is, I think, was a really good surprise. Not because, you know, we don't know how good Alex is as a person, but, you know, how is he as a coach? And he was put in a tough situation. I think he worked really well with that group. You know, everybody on that team knew him, played against him, the majority of them, obviously. So, and I think that the energy that he was bringing every day was really interesting. So, you know, I expect him to be back too.
The other big talking point in your neck of the woods, Ren, is the future of Philip Deneau. What does your gut say you there?
That's a really good question. You know, if you look at Philip, he didn't sign a 6-year deal at $5 million per a year ago. So you have to wonder if he really wants to be back with the Montreal Canadiens. You know, when you're rejecting terms like that and money like that, you have to question yourself why Philip decided to look the other way. But that being said, that's Marc Bergevin's job now to find a way to keep Philip. So it's going to be obviously interesting to see how things are going to evolve. As everybody knows, he's UFA by the end of the month. So do I expect him to sign a contract with the Montreal Canadiens? Right now, I would say it's 50-50. So we'll see. We'll see how it's going to turn out, but we're getting late here in the game. So, you know, it doesn't mean that Philip is not going to go in the free agent market, look what's available, and make a decision after. We've seen that before, right? So we'll see. It's a unique chance for him to see what his real value is out there. And you never know. Maybe he'll find something that's going to open his eyes. But he knows what the Montreal Canadiens are prepared to offer, what the Montreal Canadiens are as a team, as a franchise. So we'll see. I'm pretty sure it's not easy for Philippe right now because he's got a big decision to make by the end of the month.
One more on Montreal, and that is whether it's Ducharme, whether it is Marc Bergevin, a general manager, or just the team overall. I mean,
yeah.
There was a stretch here in Calgary where Flames fans thought they could catch the Habs down the stretch in the regular season, and there was still hope, which is bonkers when you look back at it. And now here they are. They go to Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final. Like, you've covered this team. You've covered this league for a long time. Can you remember a narrative changing so dramatically like the one that Montreal's did this year?
You know, I understand your question. And I don't want to say that in my mind there was no doubts, okay? But one thing that Dominic Ducharme was repeating every time we were talking to him, this guy, we're playing 25 games in 43 nights. No other team in the NHL history played that many games in only 43 nights. So I think that, and I don't want it to, because I think the Bruins played this kind of the same amount of games in the last 43 days, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Okay. And the Bruins did play well. If you look at their the standing during these that stretch, they were by far the better team, but they didn't last long in the playoffs because they were obviously exhausted. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not a surprise for me to see the Montreal Canadiens in the Stanley Cup final. But one thing that I can tell you is this. March 13, Ben Chiarot went down for 6 weeks with a hand injury. And it was the beginning of a long stretch for the Canadiens where There was bodies going on the IR, if not every game, close to it. Everybody was banged up. And when you look at the big picture, the first game that they played where everybody was quote-unquote healthy, or I should say available, was the first game in the playoffs versus Toronto. So it's been a while. And after that, yes, they were struggling even versus the Maple Leafs. But Dominic Ducharme was capable of turning that ship around. That's what he did, convincing veterans that, you know, that playoff series is far from being over. And the rest is history. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I understand your question, but it was not a normal year. So it's impossible to compare because it never happened before, right?
Yeah.
So I understand that, you know, there's some people who are looking at the Canadiens and probably they feel like they were lucky. They were not lucky. I'm telling you, that team was not lucky. They just find themselves, I should say, late in the season.
Mm-hmm. In conversation with Renaud Lavoie, TVA Sports, we're spinning you around the NHL this afternoon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Your reaction, the biggest news of the hockey world today, the Minnesota Wild buying out Parise and Ryan Suter. What's your thought there? And you know, Minnesota, a team that surprised many this year, and we've talked about it already on this show. Bill Guerin has gone on there, and he's certainly got his fingerprints all over this team now.
Yeah, and, you know, every time he's making a move, feels like he's making the right move since he's in charge in Minnesota. So, Zach Parise, I'm not surprised. Why I'm saying I'm not surprised is because the number of times that he was a healthy scratch during the season or during the playoffs, you know, the writing was on the wall. It was obvious that they were going in another direction. With Suter, when you look at veteran defensemen that are playing the right way, can bring a lot, still, I believe, bring a lot to the table. It's kind of shocking, but I'm pretty sure that they're looking at his salary and, you know, what they're paying compared to what he's bringing. And they decided to make a move. So Zach Parise, I'm not surprised. Suter, I am. But they're saying at the same time that they want to change, I guess, the leadership group. So it's totally understandable. Now there's a lot of people who are saying, well, it's strange because, you know, cap-wise, in two or three seasons, the cap hit will be major. And I totally understand that. But I believe that Bill Guerin knows exactly who's going to come in. In the next few years, players that are in the system right now. So that team is going to be a little younger. And if you look at the USA market, you have players like Tyler Toffoli making under $5 million per. It's not great to be a UFA. It's not the time to be a UFA in the NHL. So, but I'm pretty sure that he knows that he can find some really good players, that he's not going to overpay them. And, you know, playing in Minnesota is a great place to play, as everybody knows. So so I think it's kind of a bold move, but it, in a way, I believe it's the right move.
What's your feel on, you know, what these buyouts mean for the contract of Kirill Kaprizov?
Well, I know. Are we going to see more? That's the real question here, mm-hmm. right? Around the league, there's some speculation about a lot of players, which is totally understandable. But, you know, let's say you're Ryan Suter or you're Zach Parise today. I know it's not a good day, but at the same time, it's a great day because you're going to sign with a probably a really good hockey team. Yes, you're going to be, in a way, underpaid. But you have now a chance to play on a team that wants to win a Stanley Cup now, not in 3 or 4 years or 5 years. So that's the bright side. So it's possible that we'll have more players being bought out. But every situation, I believe, is different. So it's tough for me to be here and to say, yes, that guy's going to be bought out. No, that guy won't. Every team's got a different perspective. They're looking at their cap. They're looking at who's coming in, who's available. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think it's a mistake to say, well, the Minnesota Wild did just that. So this is what needs to happen in Calgary or in Edmonton or wherever around the league. No, you cannot. You need to understand that every situation is different. So we'll see how things are going to evolve, because don't forget, the expansion of draft is really important here. You like D'Angelo with the Rangers. Everybody knows that he's going to be bought out, but he needs to be exposed for the expansion draft. So what's going to happen after is really interesting, I believe.
He's Renaud Lavoie. He's our guest from TVA Sports here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Speaking of the expansion draft, Ren, many believe we're kind of in this holding period until we get to that point, but it is next Wednesday. The draft is on the following Friday, and then, of course, free agency right after that. How busy do you expect, once we get past the expansion draft, how busy do you expect things to be across the league?
I think it will. It's a special year for many reasons. Cap is staying flat. So there's a lot of people who are going to say, well, it's impossible to make big moves when the cap is flat. Well, yes and no, because you have actually, as mentioned, the expansion draft coming in. And so I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of teams right now who are trying to take advantage of that. I mean, Ron Francis is ready to get some players that are probably not necessarily on the radar for their team that they're playing actually right now. But there's a price to be paid. And the price, I think it's been reported a week ago or 2 weeks ago, it's a first-round pick that needs to come with it. So that being said, that's right now what's going to happen by the end of this week. That's another story. But what GMs don't want to do right now is take Riley Smith the Panthers did a few years ago when we had the Vegas expansion. Take Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault is going to be available and you can pick him up. That was a disaster. You're giving assets like that for no reason. Riley Smith is a good player, was making $5 million per, and you're letting go a guy like Marchessault who's going to help you win games. And so that's the kind of mistake that the GMs don't want to make, but that's where Ron Francis is holding the cards and looking at these GMs saying, if it was good for Vegas, it's going to be good for me too. And I understand the situation, but we'll see. We'll see. Ron Francis needs to build a team. He wants the best players. Am I saying that he wants to be at the Stanley Cup final next year? No, that's not what I'm saying. But at the same time, he needs to make sure that, you know, he's got the luxury to have an expansion draft that's going to give him a chance to compete right from the get-go. And he needs to take advantage of that. So that's why I believe that there'll be a lot of discussions this week with who needs to be put, who needs to be available at the expansion draft, and how some teams are going to make sure that they can get rid of some contracts by quote-unquote being held by Seattle.
Two more for you, Ren. First of all, how surprised were you that Edmonton made that deal for Duncan Keith and Chicago did not retain any salary?
You know, I know people were really, really hard on the Oilers. But there's a trend right now. The trend is bring me some Stanley Cup champions. And the more Stanley Cup champions that I have in my organization, the better my chances are to win that Stanley Cup or to go at the Stanley Cup final. That's what the Marc Bergevin did, right? And it's a copycat league. So they're looking at what Marc did. And what people are forgetting here is there is some value in players like Dalton Keith. So at the same time, there's two sides to this story. Duncan Keith, I think the only place where technically he really wanted to play was Edmonton. So I don't think Vancouver was really in the mix. So that's another problem, right? So I think it's easy here to say and play Monday morning quarterback and say, you know what, Ken Holland did a big mistake, but we'll see how it's going to turn out. Maybe he's going to be to have the last laugh. You know, the Oilers are not that far away, but they badly need a winning attitude. They badly need players who won that Stanley Cup. And not only one of them, they need a lot because every year we're saying, well, this year it's their years, but we all know they're not playing the right in the playoffs. So I think an Holland move was really interesting. I don't think it's his last move. So he needs to find good players that's going to help him to bring the Stanley Cup in Edmonton. But, it's, you know, now there's 32 teams competing for the same thing. And that's why sometimes the prices are higher than people expect.
And finally, I know that you had an opportunity to cover Pekka Rinne in a Stanley Cup final a few years ago. That guy means a lot to Nashville, doesn't he?
And to the NHL. Because I'm a French-Canadian guy coming in, and wherever I saw him, All-Star Games, Nashville, wherever, Montreal, I mean, that guy was always an unbelievable ambassador for the Predators and for the NHL. Always smiling, always available. Stanley Cup final, he's acting the same way that if it's a preseason game. Everybody's different. But I just hope that the league is going to make sure, or the Predators they're going to make sure that he's going to stay around. Because you want to have people like him in your organization. He's a really smart person. He played the game the right way. It's a little sad that he never got that Stanley Cup, but you know what? It was a great career for him, and I was there when he won his Vezina. He was so happy. I can talk about Pekka Rinne for hours, even if, you know, I met him just a few times and had a few discussions with him. But he always, when you're meeting him for the first time, it's like you had already tons of discussions with him. So he's that type of guy. He's not acting like he knows more than you or that he's bigger than you or whatever. He's a human being. Talking to another human being. He's an unbelievable guy. So congrats to him, to his family, and hopefully it's not the last time that we'll have the chance to have conversation about the game with Pekka Rinne.
Great stuff, Ren. Appreciate the time. Thanks for catching up with us today.
No problem. Enjoy the rest of the day.
You as well. Ren Olivois from TVA Sports in Montreal and one of our NHL insiders across the league on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Make it a great night. Choose from pizza and wings, pasta and seafood, or steaks and ribs. Order now through DoorDash or dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. As we roll on, it's the big show on a Tuesday. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is the big show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
So yesterday was the Stanley Cup parade for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think Nikita Kucherov is still hammered. I think he might still think the parade is going on right now. By the way, if you hadn't heard Kucherov, this is, we won't play the swear word part, but this was just a little bit of Nikita Kucherov on live TV yesterday.
Unreal. All the people right here, unreal. Love them all. Let's party hard. Our time, baby. Back to back. That's how we do it.
What do you think of this team?
Unbelievable. No, nobody can beat us. back-to-back years. You know, it's an unreal team. Everybody was playing hard. You know, I wish we could keep everybody, but that's business. You know, but you know, as of right now, let's party hard. Let's enjoy it. You know, we deserve it.
And in Tampa, there's a boat parade. No regular parades. We get on boats. How do you like that?
Unreal. I think nobody else has done that before. It's unreal. Look how many people here, how many people on the ball. It's just unreal.
Well, congratulations, guys. I mean, Circuit Jeff, you want to say anything?
Thank you.
How did I know that was coming?
By the way, at the end there, Sergachev decided to dump a beer on the reporter's head. What is he doing? Kucherov is going to give Ovechkin a run for how long the party lasts after being Stanley Cup champion. Okay, a couple things. Number one, Nikita Kucherov's English as a Russian is as good as I can remember. Like that guy has dialed right in on the English language, so good. That's actually really impressive. Number two, that guy has turned into like the biggest villain in the NHL after his Game 5 comments where he was ragging on Montreal fans and the number one bull and all, like, and then he gets his Bud Light deal and then he busts out the nobody can beat us after winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. Like, the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think spearheaded by Nikita Kucherov, Are they not the NHL's version of the New England Patriots? Like, not only are they the best, not only are they the most consistent and the model franchise, but everybody hates them. Everybody dislikes the way they go about it. Everybody's going to see if they can find ways that they've cheated, so on and so forth. The Lightning have become that team, especially now they've turned all that regular season success into back-to-back cups.
Yeah, it's true, and I think there probably is something to be said about that, and the crazy part is the people that have issues with them partying, like, this is not the first time we've seen this. The Capitals did the same thing. They didn't win the back-to-back. Look at what they did in Chicago after winning all their Stanley Cups. I don't quite understand the I can't believe they're partying thing. Like, I don't have a problem with that, but into your point about them being, you know, the Patriots, perhaps, of the NHL, yeah, I think that's probably a little bit more legit. But if you got a problem with them partying, like, they just won back-to-back Stanley Cups, who cares?
I'd be partying, especially if I was in Tampa, Florida. Yeah, have at her. I'm pouring beer on reporters' heads too. I love it. I love the way Kucherov's leaning into, I don't care, we're the best, try to beat us. I think it's awesome. Yeah, we're going to try to keep everybody that's business. In Elliott's 31 Thoughts on Friday, you know, people are already wondering how Tampa's going to quote-unquote tamper to try to keep Goodrow or Coleman or both. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. They're going to have to trade Tyler Johnson, I think, and he's got some value now after having a really good playoff run and having 1 year less on his contract. But I love the way they're leaning in. I really do. It's been pretty funny to see. You've heard the promo a couple of times. By the way, Matt Stajan coming up in just a couple of minutes. Get his end of NHL season thoughts.
Did you see the, by the way, did you see the injuries?
The Montreal injuries?
In Tampa?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Just
Hedman tore meniscus on March 30th. He'll have surgery. Barclay Goodrow and Ryan McDonough both broke their hands in the playoffs.
Yeah.
One hand, I guess I should say, not both hands. Alex Killorn, that story is insane.
And he was trying to come back.
Broke his fibula on the Monday, had surgery on the Thursday, then was skating by Saturday to try and get back on the ice. And Kucherov had a non-displaced rib fracture after that hit in Game 6 against the Islanders. So then wore a flak jacket the rest of the playoffs and got a massive nerve shot before every game.
It's unbelievable what these human beings will do to win a Stanley Cup. And some people criticize it, some people love it. I just think it's incredible. Whether you think it's smart or not, I think it's incredible. There's no way I'm doing... If I've got a hangnail, I'm not coming to work. And these guys are like, oh, yeah, my foot is dangling. But, yeah, can you shoot it up? Can you put a piece of wood? I can play. Let's do it.
Speaking of feet dangling, we never talked about it yesterday, but that McGregor thing was gross.
Not quite as gross as Anderson Silva.
Pretty close.
It was close, though.
How that bone didn't pop through the skin, I will never understand.
You want to go to Whistler? Do you want to golf? We've got four rounds of golf for you. We're teaming up with our friends at New West Travel once again. Here is the perfect indicator.
You can party like Kucherov.
you can party like Kucherov, because here is the perfect indicator that we're almost through this thing. We're hooking up back with our friends at New West Travel, and in September, we have got a dream golf getaway for you. So here's the deal. New West is sending you with Pinder to Whistler, BC.
Who parties like Kucherov.
He will party like nobody else. Three nights, four-star Westin Resort and Spa, four rounds of golf at four different championship courses, Big Sky, Fairmont Chateau Whistler, Nicholas North, and the Whistler Golf Course. You've got VIP travel there. You've got premium tee times. You've got all kinds of benefits once you're on the course. You've got parties at night. This is the dream. If you are a golfer, this is the dream golf experience. If you'd like to sign up, if you'd like to be a part of this, go to sportsnet.ca/960. You can get the link to book now. It's our friends Dennis and the gang at New West Travel are hooking us up once again and hooking you up once again. Once again, sportsnet.ca/960 for the Whistler golf trip. Matt Stajan wraps up the season, looks ahead to the offseason, his thoughts on Suter and Parise being bought out, a whole lot more with NHL analyst Matt Stajan to kick off the hour next on Sportsnet 960. And for the final time this season, we say hello to our NHL analyst, former Calgary Flame Matt Stajan joins us in the program. Hello, Matty, what's going on?
I'm good. How are you guys? Welcome back, Pat.
Thank you very much. It was a good 2 weeks off. It's good to be back, though.
Yeah, weird turn of events. Pat was at the racetrack for 2 weeks. So.
Yeah, mid-Stanley Cup, eh? Just 2 weeks off.
Yep.
There you go.
There's nothing going on.
He's partying like Nikita Kucherov. That's what he was doing.
Good for you.
Hey, and then you got to get ready for Stampede Week. There's lots to do in the off season when you're a degenerate, Matty. Hey. What I would imagine that as a guy who's been a veteran in the NHL, a guy who has been near the end of his career, I know you were never bought out, but I would imagine that you can, at the very least, put yourself in the shoes of Zach Parise or Ryan Suter being bought out by Minnesota today, and at the very least, be in a good spot to kind of understand what might be going through their head right now. What do you think is going through their head today?
Yeah, it's obviously you kind of see it coming if it's getting to that point. You know, there was chatter at one point where, yeah, I could have possibly got bought out before Bob Hartley came in. So it you hear about it, you know, as much as you're so focused on your own individual situation and what you got to do on the day-to-day, you still hear the noise around you. Especially in Canada, and I'm sure Minnesota's quite the hockey market, and you talk to your agent, but you get a feel for it, and yeah, it's not the best feeling when you hear a chatter like that or when you're in a trade rumor, but at the same time, you know it's part of the business, and you kind of got to take a positive approach to it where, you know, these guys might get bought out, and, you know, a guy like Zach Parise or Suter can go to a contender now, maybe sign for league minimum, still cash in on, you know, majority of their contract and have a really good chance of winning and picking their spot. So you can look at the positive on it, but for sure as competitive guys and when you sign that deal, you obviously want to live up to that contract and you just have to get past that and look at the positive.
Well, here's a, you know, one of many reasons why I was never an NHLer, you know, not the, you know, the poor skill and the lack of athletic ability, all that stuff. But on top of it, I don't think I was wired like an NHLer, Matty, because I remember when Vinny LeCavalier got his buyout in Tampa Bay and then signed his deal with Philadelphia and then got that buyout there. Like, I was like, that guy's living the life. That guy's getting paid by two teams. He can play wherever he wants. Like, that's my dream. I want to sign a big contract and then get bought out and then get, like, a 10-year buyout where I get $1.5 million every July 1st. That to me, sounds like the dream. And again, one of many reasons why I didn't make the NHL.
Well, it's not bad to get that payday, let's be honest. But at the same time, as a player, you're a proud person.
Yeah.
You've worked your whole life for that contract. But, you know, even if you look at Parise's case, he was getting healthy scratch this year. You know, so he's not in a situation where that he wants to be in anymore. And sometimes it's best to move on. And that's up to the team. But for him, he's probably like, you know what, let's move on. And on top of that, you get the bonus of getting all that money every year on July 1st or whatever it is. So, hey, it's a win-win for him at that point. But, yeah, at one point he was playing, you know, every situation. And when that goes away and, you know, you're not playing, you know, to the status, or you're not being used to what you signed that contract for. As a player, you probably want a new situation, and you know, it's just always a tough few weeks when you're going through it.
Those two guys, contemporaries of yours, I think they're both 85s and you're in 83. So, yeah, you guys basically were NHL contemporaries. How do you reflect on the NHL careers to this point of both Ryan Suter and Zach Parise?
Well, they're both outstanding players. You know, Parise always just seemed to score a timely goal, especially when he was in New Jersey, you know, playing against him even when I was in the Eastern Conference on Toronto. He would always just score that timely goal. He just had a knack for you know, getting to the net, even with a small frame. And he was an effective player, obviously. You know, just look at his stats and, you know, the leader he was in all these teams, and why he got the contract in Minnesota to begin with. Well, both guys is because they were that type of player. And things didn't go the way they wanted to in Minnesota, obviously, but I don't think, unless they win a Stanley Cup there, you'd say it went the way, and that usually goes for about 98% of the league every year. So, but they've had great careers, and they're going to be nice depth pieces, you know, next year for whoever brings them in on the cheap here.
He's Matt Stage, and he joins us every single Tuesday for the final time this season. Then Matt, he'll take the summer off, but we'll be back in the fall, all things NHL. Will Nault, Pat Steinberg as well. Matty, let's roll on and continue. This time in Edmonton, you'd have a lot of stories playing against this guy, but the biggest question about Duncan Keith as an Oiler is everybody was stunned that they did not get Chicago to retain any salary, and they wonder how much tread is left on the tires, knowing how much hockey he's played. I said to Pat yesterday, and you can put this in perspective, Duncan Keith just finished his last year in Chicago playing over 23 minutes a night for the 16th straight year. That is a lot of hockey, and I'm curious your thought on Duncan Keith in Edmonton and maybe what's left in the tank on those final 2 years of his deal.
Well, I'm a little bit surprised about how much backlash the move is. I guess if you look at the logistics of it, maybe you could have got him for a little less or some salary retained. But the player you're getting a guy that's won Norris trophies, Stanley Cups, and he's bringing that competitiveness that, you know, Edmonton, you know, misses on the back end. And maybe he's not the player he once was, but I remember playing against Duncan Keith, and he was, you know, not to put it lightly, but just a prick to play against. He'd jump into the play offensively and do his thing there. But in his own end, he would slash you. He did not care who you were, you know, what you were doing. He just fought and made you earn whatever it was you were going to get. And I remember vividly watching, being on the bench or on the ice, and they would just hold each other accountable. He would be yelling at that Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane would be yelling back at him, you know, to, you know, get going or whatever they were doing on their side. And
very clean language, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? It worked for them. And he's going to bring that to Edmonton. Maybe he won't get, you know, the smooth 30-minute a night guy that he once was, but you're still going to get some quality minutes, and you protect him a bit. But he's going to bring that competitive edge and hold guys accountable and show guys what it takes to get over the top, because he's done it. Maybe that's what Edmonton needs, because we saw a little bit of that from Connor McDavid there in that last game when he was pretty upset with Puljujärvi there on a couple of those plays there early in the period, and that, you know, him giving it to him, and people are kind of like, you can't do that. But there's a time you can do that, and when you have a veteran guy that's going to do that, and Duncan Keith's going to have that respect, I think it's going to help Edmonton here in the short term. And we'll see how it plays out, though. It all depends how he gets used. But yeah, the backlash, yeah, I could see how you wish you had a little bit more cap space there, but you're getting a good player, good depth player.
That's, I think, the biggest thing and the hardest thing for Pat and I to relate to and talk about is what you just discussed. And whether it's Edmonton or anybody else, if you're a team that's trying to get over the hump, how valuable is that inside a locker room, especially for a guy, as you mentioned, with two Norris trophies, three Stanley Cups on his resume? It's something that, you know, Pat and I can't quantify, but Matty, take us inside an NHL locker room. Like, how important is that, especially for a group like Edmonton?
Well, it's very important. And that's why when, like, people always sometimes laugh or, you know, complain about having veteran guys that, you know, weren't the players they once were. But there's so much more to it, because a dressing room, there's such a dynamic in every dressing room, and who holds, you know, the respect in the room, how the room operates. And sometimes, you know, well, fans for sure don't see it, but I even think coaches lose sight of that sometimes, and management, and, you know, they'll scratch a guy, you know, people are like, well, why wouldn't Eric Staal get scratched? And at the end there, you can have that argument, you know, he's not the player he once was, he could have brought more speed in, but there's more to it than just, you know, the speed and that aspect on the ice. There's the dressing room aspect where when you sit a guy and he's not in that room anymore, you know, it just changes the dynamic in there. Who's speaking? You don't know what that guy's doing in the room. And I think it's very important. You know, it's a key piece to any locker room. I'm a firm believer in that. And every dressing room has it. And sometimes it's guys you don't think that are doing it. And sometimes, you know, fans definitely lose sight of that. But a lot of times I've seen coaches and management lose sight of that. And they'll scratch a guy and it affects the team in a way that they never, you know, thought would.
Certainly not going to ask you to divulge any secrets or tell us about conversations you may or may not have had, but a lot of people in this city, Matt, are wondering about Mark Giordano and his future. Expansion lists are due on Saturday. The expansion draft is 1 week tomorrow, and I think you look at the Flames roster, and it's pretty easy to guess that there's a very good chance he will be left exposed for the Seattle Kraken to potentially take him. Now, of course, there can be side deals made. There's no guarantee he's gone, but I'm just curious, you know, what you think is going on in Giordano's head. Is this has got to be probably one of the toughest weeks of his life.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's tough because it's out of your hands, really. You don't know what's going to happen. My take on it is I don't know personally what's going to happen, and, you know, what the Flames' plan is, what Seattle's plan is. But I do see it. If Calgary's still looking to, you know, be competitive and not go through a rebuild, I don't think you can lose a guy like Mark Giordano at this point. You brought Daryl Sutter in. You're in win now, trying to be competitive now. Otherwise, you're regrouping totally, in my opinion. So it'll be interesting how they go about this, because I think he would be a huge loss on the back end. People maybe don't think so, but he still plays quality minutes, over 20 minutes a night. He would be a big hole, even at the age he's at and with all the miles on his career. So I don't see him in a different uniform with where the Flames are at, but hey, that's just my opinion, and we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting.
Well, Matt Stajan's with us. Couple more with our NHL analyst. Our final chat with him this season before most of our NHL analysts take the summer off. What do you think's going through Gio's head right now? Here's a guy that, as Will pointed out when we were talking off the air, like, he's 51 games away from 1,000 in the NHL. You've been in that spot where you're close to it. This guy's been the captain for almost a decade. He's one of two players to ever get to 900 games in a Flames uniform. Like, what's going through his head knowing that his future is somewhat in the balance? I'm with you. I think he stays. I think he's the captain next year, but that's not a certainty at that point. Is he frustrated? Is he upset? Is he worried? Like, what do you think is going through his head right now? I know it's tough asking you to speak for a friend, but I'm just curious what would be going through his head.
Yeah, I just think he's a pretty laid back guy when it comes to that stuff. He knows he understands the game, the business, but he's put everything into this organization, and, you know, I know he wants to be here, and he still believes in the locker room that's there. So, you know, that's all he can really do. I don't know, you know, what, obviously management has to look at it differently and see what's best, you know, for the organization, you know, right now and long-term. But for him, he's just such a soldier, that he's, you know, worried about his workouts right now, getting himself into shape and keeping himself as ready as he can at his age, which is pretty incredible. And, you know, it'll play out the way it does. So I don't think he would have any different mindset other than get yourself ready and see how it all plays out, because I'm sure he's in contact a little bit with what might happen. But I know he understands that it's a business as well.
Final thought, Pekka Rinne announces his retirement. You played against him for a long time. He's one of those guys who is rare in this day and age in pro sports, his entire career in one market with Nashville. Just give us a thought on Rene's career and your time playing against him in the NHL.
Yeah, well, great career. He was, you know, one of the best there for a while. You always knew going to Nashville was going to be, you know, they always had a strong D, and then they had Pekka back there who, you know, was just solid for years. And, you know, big goalie. I was lucky enough to score a few on him. But, yeah, great career, I think, you know, and he went out, like, the way he wanted to. I know, and that's what happens when you get older. You got to take a limited role. This year he kind of was in the backup role, and he accepted it, embraced it, was a great teammate, and he loves that city, obviously, to finish it off there. And I'm sure he could have found another spot to play in that role, you know, maybe going forward. But, you know, I respect a guy who's happy and, you know, he put it all into one organization. And that's something you don't see very often anymore. And he had the opportunity to do that and did it. And, yeah, great career.
You played with another Finn goalie. Someone would know him in this city. His name is Mika Kiprasov. I'm curious, A, what is it about Finnish goaltenders? And B, where do you put Rene on that list? Because I think for a lot of people, you know, Kiprasov and Rene would be kind of 1-2 on that list.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, there's so many, but for longevity and they both played, you know, pretty much in one organization. And Kipper too, at the end, didn't want to leave Calgary. I remember, you know, it was that short lockout year, and he had the opportunity to, you know, move elsewhere there at the deadline, and he said, "Nope, I just want to stay here and play it out," and that was it. So you got to respect that, but they're definitely both top five, probably top three. I'd have to see a longer list, but
only other guy that I think would be in that conversation would be your former teammate Tuukka Rask.
Tuukka Rask, not my teammate. One training camp.
One training. Yeah, that's right. He never played for the Leafs. He was in the same organization.
I didn't know Andrew Raykov was Finnish.
Yeah, Raykov. We got Raykov, but I thought you were going to say Vasatoskala, who had a few good years, but
he was a former teammate.
In two organizations, he was Toronto and then here at Calgary.
That's right.
I'm trying to think of other Finnish goalies that stand out, but definitely, yeah, those two guys. Mika is the best. No one's better than Kiprasov, in my opinion. But, yeah, Pekka Rinne, quite the career. I'm surprised, a little bit surprised that he is done. Right? It kind of came out of nowhere. I thought maybe he'd take a couple more years, play for league minimum as a backup. But
he probably didn't want to go anywhere else, right? I mean, he probably wanted to be in Nashville or nobody else, and they probably said, hey, you know, we don't want to really bring you back as a backup. And so he said, that's okay. I'll just call it a career then. So
yeah, and who knows? He might. It'll be interesting if he lives in that city, if he's a part of that organization, or if he's going to do what Mika did and just kind of goes in the middle of nowhere in Finland, and we never see him for 10 years. Right? We'll see what happens.
Just looking to finish it off. Four Finnish goaltenders with over 300 wins: Kiprasov, Rask, Pekka Rinne, and Kari Lehtinen.
There you go.
That's Brent Kron's
boy. Lehtinen would be four.
He was
my draft.
Sorry, Kari.
2002 Atlanta. So he was good. He just had injury problems, but he had a good career too.
What's the summer hold for you, Stage?
A little bit of visiting some family who we haven't seen for a while, and out in Ontario, and go to the mountains for a few weeks. It's gonna go by fast. 6 weeks till 6-7 weeks, and kids will be back at school. It's just nice. We get some little bit of normalcy now. Let's hope it stays this way until the fall.
And fingers crossed. I know they formally put in their bid today. If not sure when you're going east, Maddie, but the Jays want to be back there at the end of July. So fingers crossed they can get back to Toronto and maybe you can get a game in.
That would be nice. That would be nice. But I don't know. we'll see. Ontario seems to be a little bit behind in everything, so by choice. So, they're not stampeding, that's for sure.
That is true. They are not. Maddie, have a good summer. Best to yours and your family. Enjoy it. Thanks for everything all year. It was great to have you as part of the show this season, Matt. I know it wasn't super positive talking about the team in this city at all times, but it was great to have you on. Great perspective. Always awesome to hear the stories. So thanks so much for doing that all year, Maddie.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys, and enjoy your summers as well.
You too. Matt Stajan on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Make it a great night. Choose from pizza and wings, pasta and seafood, or steaks and ribs. Order now through DoorDash or dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. And by the way, in terms of all-time Finns between the pipes, you got Pekka Rinne, most games played, Kari Lehtinen 2, Kipper 3, Rask 4. All-time save percentage. Rask is 1, UC Saros, who's played significantly less, is 2, there's Rene at 4, Kiprasov is 6, all-time save percentage for Finns. Kipper's save percentage took a big hit in his final years in Calgary, though. Those few years, that guy was untouchable. Like, the dude was, I think, to Stage's point, and obviously there's some regional bias in there, I think at their peak, Kiprasov the best career, no question, to this point, would be Pekka Rinne, although Rask is pretty close to being able to surpass that.
Now, of course, it is a team stat. Rask would have the Stanley Cups, which Rinne does not have. But all the respect to Kiprasov, like, for me, I'd put Pekka Rinne at the top of that mountain. I'd probably put Rask at 2. I'd probably put Kiprasov 3.
Overall, just
because, you know, that's the way it worked out. And you know, if Kiprasov ends up winning the Stanley Cup in 2004, that probably greatly changes things. But as you say, the save percentage took a beating a couple of those years in Calgary, most notably the last year where he had 882. It's still pretty good, though, for a country that, you know, kind of all they're known for is pumping out goaltenders.
You asked Matty about Mark Giordano and kind of the uncertainty with his status ahead of the expansion draft. Well, the expansion draft is 8 days away. We'll find out how it all goes down. 6 o'clock next Wednesday, and we've got full coverage for you, brought to you by Adrenaline Source for Sports, your skate supercenter. Find the newest models of hockey skates custom fit on site. Adrenaline Source for Sports at 9309 McLeod Trail South. From one Matt to another Matt, Matty Rose, day 4 of Stampeders training camp is underway. The Stamps Report is next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to The Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Day 4 of training camp for the Calgary Stampeders, 3.5 weeks away from their season opener. It's time for Matty Rose and the Stamps Report.
After 3 days of camp, we take a closer look at the group of receivers that Bo Levi Mitchell will have at his disposal, at least early on in training camp. A new group, plenty of variety, highlighted by veteran Kamar Jordan, 2019 first-round pick Herjee Mayala. Nothing new for the receivers to come in and jockey for a position, but as head coach Dave Dickinson explained, this group is more raw than most.
I did a little quick look the other day of our 20 or 21 receivers. Three of them have more than 1 year of experience. So we need those guys, the Coltons, H, Josh Huff, you know, we need those guys that have at least been in our system to keep taking that next step. But we're young. We're very, very young. And one thing about, I think, the Calgary Stampeders offensively is we are complex. It's not like it's an easy system to learn. So it's on us coaches to simplify. Even today's practice, I think I put too much in. I really do. So I took the heat for that. We played a little bit slower than we wanted to. So practice a little slower. So that's one of the things as a young, inexperienced team, I'm going to have to back off a little bit on install schedules and make sure I don't overload the guys.
You heard Dave mention a handful of players in there, but two of the more polarizing are both national receivers. Herjee Mayala had a great tail end to the 2019 season to the point where he was pushing Nate Holly for Rookie of the Year in 2019 as the Stampeders nominee. Nate Holly, of course, went on to win the award, and now Nate's twin brother Nick is in Calgary trying out to be a receiver for the club. We'll have more on him in just a moment. But first, Dave Dickinson's thoughts on Herjee Mayala, who caught 38 of 47 passes for 562 yards with 6 touchdowns as a rookie in 2019.
He's thick. He can run block. He can pick up blitzers like our inside slots have done over the years. So, you know, I want to give him that opportunity and kind of see where I can use his skill set. He wants it. I mean, there's not too many people that want it more than H. You know, you just got to sometimes pull him back and just play within the offense, do what you do, and the ball will find you.
Mayala was one of the Stampeders receivers that was in town for the past 20-odd months, and whenever provincial guidelines would allow, they would get together and work on things from the playbook.
And for us, it was just to get together and kind of understand each other and understand the quarterback. I feel like all of us at the field at the same time, we never did that. So coming in every single day and kind of going through the plays and everything like that, definitely helped us kind of get to the same pitch as well.
I believe the full group was Kamar Jordan, global receiver Andreas Salgado, national receiver Colton Hunjack, and then Mayala. At the tail end of the clip, he mentions the same thing that Dave did earlier. It's a complex offense, and being on the same page as Bo Levi Mitchell is important. Earn his trust, and you'll find yourself with more targets. Interesting connection for Herge at camp this season as well. TJ Vernieri, a teammate in the receiver group at the University of Connecticut while Mayala was there. And then he went on to be the wide receivers coach for a Div 3 college the past three seasons. Now, Vernieri is up here as an offensive assistant on Dave Dickinson's staff, getting a taste of coaching pro football. I asked Mayala about that connection after day three of camp.
Oh, man. Me and TJ go way back. So I got there in 2015, and TJ walked in 2016. And he's the only guy that I can definitely say that every single time that I got in the weight room to put in extra work, he was always there. You know what I mean? He was trying to compete against me and trying to, you know, push me to get better. At the same time, him learning. Unfortunately for him, you know, injuries kind of slowed his career and took a different path. But me and TJ go way, way back.
Is he pushing you pretty hard now that he's the offensive assistant up here?
I wouldn't say all that, but I would definitely say that, yeah, you know, me and him, we can easily talk. And, like, you know, we developed that kind of relationship over the years. And then whenever I got something that I didn't do wrong, he can just put me on the side and be like, hey, like, this is what you got in. Somebody that, you know, I trust.
Another national receiver back for his second stint is Calgarian Colton Hunchak, who's been mentioned a few times already as someone who has kept in close contact with the other players in town. And Dave Dickinson has his eye on him. He's liked what he's seen through a few days of camp.
I'm noticing his leadership. I'm seeing that he knows what he's doing. I think quarterbacks love receivers that know the offense, adjust, can put people in the right places. I think he's gotten a little faster and a little bit bigger and stronger. So, you know, I think he can do a lot of things for us, inside, outside, like his leadership, but I do think his athleticism has increased as well. And he's always been real confident with sure hands. So, yeah, it's been a good start for him.
And Colton spoke to the assembled media for the first time this season. Mark Stevens, a News Talk, Danny Austin, Post Media, and myself, as he prepares to take the next step in his career.
You try and train as much as possible leading up to the camp and everything, but there's just nothing that's going to translate, right? You're going to go out, work out for 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes push an hour and a half, but you're damn sure not going out for, 3 hours and doing a heavy workout and running, you know, 7+ kilometers and stuff. But it's good. It's good. It's definitely nice to be back in the locker room with the guys and back on the field with all of them. So it's been great.
Sure. It feels like every time we've talked to Bo recently, he brings you up. I'm curious, what's that relationship like with him, and how has it evolved since sort of, you know, you came back here in 2019?
For sure, yeah. I was, Bo offered me the opportunity to move in with him 2 months ago. His wife and family's down in the States. So we both felt that we wanted to, work out with each other and push each other. So it was a really good opportunity for me. I jumped on that right away. And, even just off the field stuff, seeing how he goes on a day-to-day basis as a pro and just that, you know, championship mentality day in and day out, it's great. And it's trickling off onto me. So it's been awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine learning from a professional, just, I mean, not that you're not a professional, but you're still young in your career. It's just got to be,
yeah,
it's got to be help you evolve crazy.
Oh, 100%, big time. Yeah. And he's just such a genuine guy, and, you know, he's helping me out in all aspects, not even just with football too, just with life. You know, I'm a young father as well, so I definitely look up to him. He's a great father and has a great family. So, yeah, he's been a great leader for me on and off the field.
Yeah, Colton, I just wanted to ask what it's been like being on the field with Marquay McDaniel, someone who I'm sure you probably watched kind of growing up as a Stampeder, and mm-hmm. Now he's your receiver coach. What's that dynamic like?
Most definitely. It's been great because actually since Quay's been here for the past year, even though we were off, I had the opportunity to talk to him on a weekly basis, and especially leading up to the season here with this last couple months, all the guys in Calgary, we've been given the opportunity to work with him. And just the mental side of the game for him, how he sees it, you know, tempo in your route, seeing the defense, how your route's going to change off different coverages and everything. That's what I love the most about it is, and especially having a coach who's played the position as well, he can really relate to the stuff that you're doing and the questions you're asking.
Is he kind of telling you anything along the lines of when I played with Bo, like there was this kind of relationship from time to time, stuff like that, as you're going through it as well? Is he kind of calling on those?
Yeah, most definitely. The biggest thing I found talking with Quay and just knowing how Bo operates – is if you just got to see the same thing that Bo's seeing, right? You got to read coverages and just know the rules within different routes off the coverages. And, you know, Bo's great with reading your body language and stuff. So if you just be definitive and really know, you know, your job within different defensive coverages, you're going to be good.
Hi, Colton. Just wanted to check in with you sitting way up here where we are. You look faster and more explosive. Is that accurate?
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think so. I actually gained a decent amount of weight throughout the pandemic. You know, I'm not afraid to talk about that now because I trimmed up. And, you know, that was actually a main reason of why I went in and moved in with Bo, just to kind of change my lifestyle and really lock in. And but yeah, I appreciate that, Mark. I'm feeling a lot better. I'm feeling faster, feeling stronger. You know, and definitely my mental as well is, I feel I'm seeing stuff a little bit better as well.
And just the confidence factor of, you know, being back.
Most definitely. And I think being in Calgary throughout the offseason, having the chance to, you know, talk to the coaches on a weekly basis, just about little things too, right? It's all about the little things, especially in this offense, really detailed.
That is Colton Hunchak, the former York receiver and Calgary product, who was an 8th-round pick of the Stamps back in 2019, almost 2 years later, back for his sophomore season. Mentioned Nick Hawley a few minutes ago. Just a couple thoughts on the CFL rookie, who is the twin brother of former Stampeders linebacker Nate Hawley, the same linebacker who won the CFL Rookie of the Year award in 2019, earning himself a deal with the Miami Dolphins. Nick recently played in the XFL and Spring League after attending the Rams training camp as an undrafted free agent in 2018. That following a college career where he played receiver, running back, and quarterback at Kent State. He's now wearing his brother's familiar number 40 and says they've been staying in close contact.
I started warming up the other day, and with the elevation being different from back home, I said, "What in the world is going on here?" He said, "Welcome to Calgary." We've kind of chopped it up back and forth every day, and there's been a couple times where we're going through special teams reps, and obviously he did pretty well last year, but I bust his chops and say, "Hey, I seen you get your butt whooped," and so then we get to talking crap back and forth and a little bit of brotherly love.
Would be pretty impressive to see a twin brother repeat as Rookie of the Year. Lofty goals. We get two draft classes coming into this season, a litany of American new free agents, but still, it is a goal. At 5'11 and 195 pounds, Nick has been getting work at the slot position early on.
I'm fairly new at the slot receiver position, but I do have an understanding of quarterback, being that I had years of behind the center. So I think with the field and with the different coverages and with the space, I think it's going to help me gain or my knowledge is going to help me gain leverage on a defense to be able to manipulate them and to get open. And I think that space kind of, you know, plays into my hand and how I play the game of football. So I think it's exciting and it gives a guy like me a chance to get pretty open.
And as we've heard Dave Dickinson say earlier, they've got 20 receivers, only 3 with more than 1 year of experience. Spots are open. It remains to see who's going to go out and grab them. With your Stamps report, I'm Matt Rose.
Thank you, Maddie, and we'll be back with another one tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. Stampeders training camp is underway 3.5 weeks from kickoff to the 2021 season for the Calgary Stampeders. Okay, we've been talking to you about this for a couple of days now. This is a big deal, and it is an awesome opportunity if you're a hardcore golfer. How about going to play 4 championship courses in beautiful, picturesque Whistler in September, little bonus of Pinder on the trip with you. And all you got to do is go and sign up, book your trip at sportsnet.ca/960. We are teaming up with our good friends, Dennis and the gang at New West Travel, and it is our unreal golf trip. So here it is, September 17th to 20th. You get return airfare on a VIP charter from WestJet, exclusive departures from the executive terminals. You got the 3 nights at the Western Resort and Spa in Whistler, 4 rounds of championship golf, Big Sky, Fairmont Chateau Whistler, Nicholas North, and the Whistler Golf Course. You got premium tee times, shared GPS golf cart. You get an exclusive tournament on the last day. Check golf clubs complimentary, 1 check bag on top of that, and round trip transfers from Vancouver to Whistler. It is all there for you. All you got to do is be a golf fan, a hardcore golfer, and all you got to go is to sportsnet.ca/960. It is the Whistler trip in September with Pinder and New West Travel. Sign up if you're interested at sportsnet.ca/960. A lot of people in Edmonton losing faith in general manager Ken Holland. Is that fair? That's next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
So a lot of Oilers fans are not happy with yesterday's Duncan Keith trade, and a lot of Oilers fans losing faith in GM Ken Holland. So the deal, Duncan Keith with a prospect to Edmonton for Caleb Jones, a conditional third-round pick, and the big one, no salary retained. Trade was bad enough. We beat the trade itself to death yesterday, so let's advance it a little bit to the bigger picture. Big Show continues. Will, Pat, Logo with you on this Tuesday. Some really interesting responses yesterday from Ken Holland. Bear with me. This is a longer clip, but just listen to this. This is an exchange with Ken Holland, GM of the Edmonton Oilers, and the Athletic's Daniel Nugent-Bowman yesterday when it comes to the Duncan Keith trade.
You know, it seems like Duncan Keith, he really wanted to be in this geographic area, to be closer to his son. You know, obviously you seem to really value him as a player and why you acquired him. But was there a case to be made for potentially trying to put the hammer down a little bit more? Because you were one of only a select couple or few teams to that he was even interested in going to.
Well, do you want me to get him for free?
Not for free. No, I just wonder if there was, it was very, I mean, odd.
You wanted a lesser price? Did you want, you didn't want Caleb Jones? You don't want the draft pick? You want them to retain 50%? Where are you going with, which would you like me to do?
Whew. I'm just curious.
You're asking me the question. You're asking me something about, did you want me to try to get them to retain money, or did you think I paid too high a price with Caleb Jones on a third round pick?
Well, the salary, as Jason Greger brought up earlier, I guess the salary retention is the biggest one, more than anything you gave up. So I guess
Daniel, my answer would be, in my conversations with Stan Bowman, he's trading one of the leaders of his team. Certainly he's 37 years of age. I'm hoping that in this trade where I acquired a 37-year-old defenseman in 1999 from Chicago, Chris Chelios, he played 9 years for the Detroit Red Wings. Now it's a different time. I understand that, but certainly Duncan Keith is bringing more to our team, from a leadership standpoint than a young player. So, I think that we had that conversation a few times over, Stan and I, about the salary, and Stan made it clear that if he wanted us to eat salary, we had to up the assets. At the end of the day, I guess Stan could, your feeling is that there's a limited team to go to, and I can squeeze somebody. It's hard to squeeze people in this league. You got to do deals that work for both teams. And I think in this case, certainly we took on a cap number, but we were getting a veteran defenseman, a leader, a guy that's been in many, many important situations, at the Stanley Cup playoff time, at international hockey, bringing leadership, played 23 plus minutes a night last year for Chicago. I think he was their number one defenseman in terms of time on ice. There's a give and a take, and the deal has to work for both teams. So you can sit on the sidelines and analyze the deal. I got to make a deal. I got to try to do something to make our team better. And I believe I made our team better today because we've got a legitimate top four defenseman.
So that's Ken Holland. Daniel Nugent-Bowman was the reporter who asked the question from The Athletic in Edmonton. That clip goes on legitimately for another about 2.5 minutes. I didn't think we needed to take the whole segment with it, but that is a good cross-section of it. My response to all that, you said it off the air. It's exactly what I was thinking as I was listening yesterday. Okay, do you want me to get him for free? If we wanted to make the deal, we had to pay a price. Well, then don't make the deal. If you're not going to be able to truly hold the Blackhawks for ransom here and truly be able to make this work advantageously for you, the Oilers, then don't make the deal. That's what it comes down to. The Blackhawks were eager to get this done. Keith was eager to leave. So say, you know what? We're willing to do this, but you're taking half the salary. I don't care if you're going to ask for more. It just seems like the Oilers got tunnel vision on this one, wanted Duncan Keith so bad, and didn't, as you said yesterday, leverage their situation. Now, we've talked enough about that, but it goes to the overall bigger picture here. And I saw it on social media. I saw it on our text line. I saw it everywhere. Oilers fans are not happy with Ken Holland and the direction of the team and the fact that he just, in their mind, potentially wasted a bunch of cap space. It's more of a bigger picture thing now that I'm fascinated in. In terms of how much faith do Oilers fans actually have in their general manager right now? And it sure does feel like this move moved them into the not so much faith category after yesterday.
And I think the biggest thing or the hardest thing for a lot of people is just knowing exactly what Ken Holland is as a GM. I mean, you look at the last handful of years in Detroit, it was a disaster. Oh. Bad contract after bad contract after bad contract, bad trades, and quite frankly, sank that team to where they are today. And it's funny, you pull up their page on Cap Friendly, they've got $48 million in cap space. So Detroit's going to be able to do some things, and I'm very curious to know what Steve Yzerman does this year. But the thing is, for me, and where I have issue for this, is Ken Holland didn't know what to say at the start because he knows he's... like, this is what I don't understand. It's fine that you want a Duncan Keith. That's totally okay. And there's a great chance that, yeah, he's going to play a little bit better in a lesser role. But it's not a secret, at least not for us, and we could be wrong. But I feel like this is a situation where you knew Vancouver wasn't in. You knew Calgary wasn't in.
Yep.
And you knew that Seattle was just kind of on the outside there and really, okay, if you were uncertain about any of those markets, it was Seattle. But the one thing you did know is Duncan Keith wanted to go to Edmonton instead of Seattle.
Yep.
And as far as I'm concerned, they were the only market involved in this conversation. And you did Chicago a gigantic favor. This is a situation where it doesn't matter about if it costed more to get retention on that salary. You were the only place that he wanted to go. And that the only team that was interested. So why are you in a spot where you're just like, yeah, we're going to make the deal? Don't make the deal then. Yeah. Why are you helping out Chicago? Why? Yeah. That's what I don't understand. I don't have a problem if you're giving up assets. I don't care about that. Hell, if you give up a second round pick, but they ate 40% of that salary, it's a way better deal.
Yep.
I just don't understand what the deal is here. It makes no sense. It's a head scratcher. And yeah, I would be concerned. The one thing that Oilers fans love to float and flaunt in your face this year was cap space. Well, guess what? You just spent a third of it on a 38-year-old defenseman.
Yep. Turns 38 on Friday.
Stupid.
Logs?
It's also tired play for me to jump down the reporter's throat and go, well, what would you have done?
That's not. I wouldn't have made the deal, Ken. Yeah,
Ken, you're the general manager who just made the trade. Answer the question. It's just deflection away from the fact that he didn't have an answer for it.
That's
exactly what that was.
Here's the clip and this is a much shorter one. Here's the clip that worried me the most. And not just because I'm an analytics guy. I would worry about this if I were an Oilers fan, because I believe this is the type of thinking that gets teams in trouble. As Ken Holland was asked about the declining performance, the declining analytics, the declining statistics of Duncan Keith.
I can't put a price on 3 Stanley Cups, 2 Norris Trophies, a Conn Smythe Trophy, 2 gold medals, you know, his leadership, what he's meant to the Chicago Blackhawks franchise, how he's played, you know, winning the Conn Smythe Trophy in 2015.
6 years
Is
ago.
Is he the same player today? No, he wouldn't be available. So part of this decision is, am I aware of the analytics? Yeah, his analytics aren't as good as they were in his prime, but I'm not asking him to be our number one defenseman to play 25 minutes together against the other team's best players. Darnell Nurse is going to do that. So in a lesser role against lesser players, in a new opportunity, playing with a different team, does he get excited? Does it you know, does the adrenaline pump a little harder because you're excited about the new opportunity? So, you know, I think if you just, sometimes you have to, am I aware of the analytics? Am I aware of the statistics? Have I talked to my staff? Yes, we've done all that.
So that's Ken Holland. And here's the problem I have. You know, we just talked to Stage earlier this hour, Matt Stajan. I'm not saying that locker room experience and Stanley Cup experience is meaningless. I think it is very meaningful in some cases. But the problem I have is that seems to be the driving force and the driving mechanism of making this. Well, he's got, as Will said, Conn Smythe Trophy 6 years ago. He's got his 3 cups. He's got his 2 gold medals. Look at all he's accomplished as opposed to what is he now? He turns 38 on Friday. He has been a declining player for the better part of a half decade now. And to just go out and say, well, he's going to be excited to come here. Intangibles and locker room presence. We're willing to take on a $5.5 million cap hit for that. Like, that to me is terrifying thinking. That to me, I believe, is not the way to run a hockey team in this day and age, especially in a flat salary cap era. That is the clip that scared me the most. If I were an Oilers fan, I'm not. I love this. It gives us a chance to talk about this. Do it all you want. It gives us great fodder for sports radio. But if I were an Oilers fan and I heard that, and that is the main reason why you're justifying making what seems like a very questionable deal on paper, that is terrifying to me about the future of your team and the future of this offseason, which, as we've talked about, Frank Saravelli said it to us, 3-4 years. This might be the most important offseason in Edmonton Oilers history. That's terrifying.
And I would suggest the evidence of what you just talked about is that's probably the way he ran things in Detroit for the last half decade that he was there, was intangibles and not with analytics. All due respect to Ken Holland, who's got one of the greatest resumes in the history of this league as a GM. I'm not trying to take shots at him, but that's not how you operate in 2021, especially for a guy who's 38 years old. And I'm sorry, but the evidence is there that this guy is very much declining. And yeah, you know what? He might play slightly better in a lesser role. But if he's playing a lesser role, why are you paying him that much money? That's what I don't understand. So it's bizarre. And I can't really think of why, you know, there's some people defending this deal. To me, it's a really, really bad trade for this team. And there was a lot of ways you could have went about it. And for, you know, all the people that talked about the salary cap space, well, again, a third of that was just eaten up by a guy who's 38 years old and who is very much declining.
It's the justification that would scare me so much about it. If you had things on paper, like, we think this guy is ready to bounce back from last year because of this, or that's, but to tell me about what he's done in his career and what, how is Duncan Keith at that cap hit making your team better? And it would worry me. Again, I don't care. Go ahead and do it. Do whatever you want. Give up some first-round picks or second-round picks for Athanasiou and let them do whatever you want. But that would worry me, and that's why I understand why some, not all, some Oilers fans are worried. And I see some Oilers fans immediately. You talk about the Oilers in this market. Well, Tree Living did this or Tree Living. That doesn't matter. That has nothing. We're not comparing them to the Flames. We're talking about the deal itself and what the Oilers have done. I don't care what Brad Treliving has done, what mistakes or missteps or successes or home runs he's had. That doesn't apply. What applies is this is a bad deal, and there has been some questionable cap management since Ken Holland took over as the GM, and that would be worrisome if I were an Oilers fan. Let's see what the rest of the offseason holds for them, because I wouldn't be sitting here saying that I would be so confident that it's going to be a good offseason for the Edmonton Oilers. Live in the Iconic Studio, he's Will, he's Logo, I'm Pat. Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Diversity, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca.
Any surprise for you that we have not heard anything on Koskinen and Neil?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because from the outside, we've talked about this, it felt like a slam dunk. Maybe not on Neil because there's 2 years left. It's a little longer of a buyout, but on Koskinen, you've got 2 years of a buyout. You got Stalock there, who could fill his role as a backup
goaltender.
You're
clearly bringing back Mike Smith.
Right. So you've got Stalock there as a guy that probably could be your number two. And you've got Koskinen to 4.5, unless they've got something worked out with Seattle where they take Koskinen. I have no idea. But that's the other interesting part for me. And I saw Jason Gregor say this today. We've said as much in Calgary. Yeah, you could flaunt it as a good thing that Seattle has essentially no one to take from your team, but that also means you have no depth.
Yep.
And that's been their problem for 10 years.
And it was their problem in a four-game sweep against the Winnipeg Jets, right?
Correct.
And yes, I'm aware the Flames didn't make the playoffs. Doesn't change a thing as to what we just said about the Edmonton Oilers. Next up, Logan Gordon, biggest stories of the day. News in Minnesota, news in Nashville, and a whole lot more. Headlines around the corner, big show into hour three on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the QX50 for 27 months. Just $479 with $3,295 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Well, you know, it's a good day when you got a ton of 780 area codes on the text line. You know we've done our job. Welcome back. Hour three of the program. The 4 o'clock hour is underway. He's Will Nault. I'm Pat Steinberg. No Oilers news today, but plenty of news around the NHL. It's time for headlines with Logan Gordon. Logo?
All right, guys. Back to the Duncan Keith trade from yesterday. And I'm just kidding. We're not actually going to do that. The big news in the NHL today coming from the Minnesota Wild. Bill Guerin with an announcement that they are buying out the final 4 years on defenseman Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. Here's Guerin this morning talking about what he called a difficult decision.
This morning we put out an announcement that we'll be buying out the remainder of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter's contracts. We want to thank Zach and Ryan for the 9 years that they've given the Minnesota Wild. They've given everything they've had on the ice and off the ice, and have had an incredible impact on this organization and in the Twin Cities. A very difficult decision that over lots of time and lots of meetings, things went into this decision. But it's a big decision that I feel we needed to make in order to keep moving forward.
The pair signed a matching 13-year, $98 million contract as free agents back in 2012. Combining the two buyouts, the Wild will receive significant cap savings for the 2021-2022 season, but not much after that. The move does, however, free up two protection spots for the expansion draft, as both players had to be protected by Minnesota unless they waived the full no-movement clauses in their contract. Both players, 36 years old, Suter registered 3 goals and 16 assists in 56 games last season. Parise, a healthy scratch at times this season, and tallied just 7 goals and 11 assists in 45 contests this season. Pat, we've talked about this a couple of times today, and sure seems like a win-now move by the Minnesota Wild, as they'll get a ton of cap space this coming season. But then Bill Guerin going to have to navigate some tricky waters when it comes to his cap the next couple years.
Yeah, and that's my biggest issue with this whole thing. They're going to get themselves a ton of flexibility this offseason. $10 million essentially opens up for them in the immediacy. That goes down to about $2 million of savings for next year. But it's those 2 seasons, not this one, not the one after, for 2 years, essentially the entire cap hit of both Parise and Suter for just under $15 million, Will, is dead cap space for the Minnesota Wild. And that is scary. If I'm a Wild fan, I'm saying to myself, okay, there's a great year. Pushed Vegas to 7, got to the playoffs, one of the great feel-good stories. But that's like a 2-year window to do something. And this is the type of move that gets made if you think that you're ready to compete for a Stanley Cup. I personally don't think they are, so I have a lot of problems with what they were doing. If I were a Wild fan, I would not like this. But I'll say this, right or wrong, whether it turns out to be the right move or the wrong move, I give Bill Guerin a ton of credit for not giving a crap what anybody else thinks and not having any gray area with the way that he goes about things. He makes a decision, and he is swift, cutthroat, and he goes about his business, and he executes. So that part I'm impressed by. I'm just not convinced this is the right long-term move for the Wild.
I disagree, only because I feel like this is a team that right now had to make these tough decisions. Parise was, we saw how effective he was. These are also two players that at that contract, including Suter, I would say, Pat, even though he was still a guy that could play at a very high level, they both had no movement clauses. This was kind of the only out they had to get away from these contracts. And yes, those third and fourth years of the buyout really, really hurt. But it's kind of the only choice they had. And the second part of that is, I think the lost, you know, note of the fact that they were likely to lose a Matt Dumba in expansion had they still had Ryan Suter on their team. So, really, the only way to get away from this, and you know, also what we've talked about league-wide is we haven't seen a lot of activity because you don't want to mess up that expansion list for your own club. So if you're somebody wanting to get Ryan Suter on your team, yeah, you might make that deal, but you might be screwing up your own expansion list. So a really tough spot to be in. Just shows you that whoever decided that 13-year contracts were a good idea is just a complete moron, because that is awful, and good thing they take that out of the CBA. But that's kind of how I look at it, and it's really unfortunate because of the cap hits in years 3 and 4, but I just don't know what other choice they had.
Scary. It's scary. Look, I hope that they... Taylor Hall, Jack Eichel, go for it. Like, I cannot wait to see what they do this offseason.
Can they sign somebody, do you think, on a monster one-year deal, a la Taylor Hall?
Yeah, now they can. Absolutely they can. Or maybe it's a two-year deal because they'll still have a little bit of flexibility for next year, too. Yeah, like, I want to see what they do. I'm just not as convinced as some others are that this Wild team is ready to take that step into the next stratosphere. They were a great story. They played outstanding hockey this year. But are they? Was this a product of a 56-game weird schedule, or are they that good? That's where I have a little bit of an issue, or that's why I'm a little skeptical, Logo. So, that's nonetheless, I love it because it is a ballsy move, and I respect it. Even though I'm like a little leery of it, I respect the hell out of it.
So that's the story with the first couple of buyouts we get this offseason. They happen in Minnesota. Parise and Suter now set to become free agents. We move to Montreal, where the Habs officially named Dominique Ducharme the 31st head coach in the team's history after signing him to a 3-year contract extension. Montreal had promoted Ducharme from assistant coach to interim bench boss in February after relieving Claude Julien from his duties. The 48-year-old compiled a 15-16-7 record during the regular season. Not exactly sterling, before guiding the Habs to the Stanley Cup final. He was, of course, asked today about the status of his two assistant coaches who helped him during the Stanley Cup playoffs while he was under COVID protocols, that being Luke Richardson and Alex Burrows. He made it clear that he wants both of them back, but at the end of the day, it's a decision for Mark Bergevin to make.
That's something that Berge needs to finalize with them, but I don't see any changes with Luke and Alex. I want them to be back with us. We all, as a organization, they did a really good job, and so they should be back. That's just a matter of time for me.
Will, on this one, we've talked about it a bit. Not really a surprise after Ducharme leads Montreal to a Stanley Cup final appearance that he would get the interim tag taken off. But we've heard from Elliot Friedman, among others, that perhaps the Laval Rockets head coaching job was going to be set for someone like Alex Burrows. Ducharme saying today he'd rather keep them on his staff if he had the choice. So now we wait and see as Ducharme officially gets to take the reins for Montreal going forward.
Yeah, and again, I don't think there's any other way they could go. Regardless of what you feel the long-term longevity is for Ducharme behind the bench in Montreal, who knows? Maybe he doesn't have or stay for all 3 years. But after the run they had on, even with the COVID quarantine involved in the middle of it, you just couldn't go away from this guy. I feel like this was, probably the least surprising news of the hockey offseason. And to be perfectly blunt about it, Montreal is in a really tough spot next season, regardless of who that coach was. And unfortunate for Ducharme, he might wear some of that blame if things don't go well next year. It's part of working and playing in Montreal, Pat. But,
yeah,
you know, a situation where this is a team that went to a Stanley Cup final, you couldn't fire that coach because it would have been met with a lot of criticism. But they might be playing in the hardest division in hockey next year. And quite frankly, I see them as the fifth best team, and they're going to be in tough.
Yeah, and probably like 9 or 10 in the Eastern Conference when you go back into the wild card format as well. I think they're in tough, but I also think that Ducharme did some really good things with this team. And I think what happened in the postseason really showed you that kind of what was getting built down the stretch, even minus all those important players, they were building something. And I do think that they deserve a lot of credit for where they went and how they got to Game 5 of a Stanley Cup Final. But the problem is they limped into a regular season. They were a 500 team prior to the bubble last season. Is this a surefire playoff team next year? I'm with Will Logo. I don't see him as a surefire group at all. In fact, if I were putting money on it, I'm putting money on Montreal missing the playoffs next year. That's not on Ducharme, and bringing him back was the right call, but I do think he's entering a really tough situation. He's almost in a lose-lose spot next year.
So Montreal has their head coach going forward. We'll wait to see what happens with their assistant coaches as they fill out Dominique Ducharme's staff heading into next season. We got word yesterday, guys, that the Nashville Predators had a major announcement to inform the press of today. We found out that would be that Pekka Rinne, at the age of 38, would announce his retirement after 15 seasons with the Predators. Drafted back in 2004, we always knew that eighth round pick would turn out to be one of the best Finnish goaltenders of all time and lead the Predators to a Stanley Cup final in 2017. He won the Vezina in 2018, was a finalist for the award multiple years, including 2011, 2012, and 2015. He finished his career with 369 wins, the fifth most in the salary cap era. Good point. Nice. Behind Marc-Andre Fleury, Henrik Lundqvist, Roberto Luongo, and Ryan Miller, his 60 career shutouts, the third most during that span. We had a little bit of a conversation with this Pat about where he stands when it comes to some of the best Finnish-born goaltenders of all time. But the conversation in Nashville, pretty short. He is by far the greatest goaltender that they've ever had, and they're losing a face of the franchise as he retires today.
Maybe the greatest Predator ever. Like let's.
I don't know this, but maybe one of the best eighth-round selections ever.
Definitely. But when you think about it, you know, Philip Forsberg's been pretty good for him, and Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, those guys would be in the conversation. But in terms of, you take a look at spending their entire time with the Predators organization, the entire career, what he has meant for that organization, I bet you there would be a large majority of Preds fans who would say Pekka Rinne, the best Predator of all time. And it's funny because on the outside, you look at it, he went to one Stanley Cup final. His greatest, like, team accomplishment would either be that or a silver medal at the World Championship. Like, he has not, as a goalie, won a lot. But boy, did he mean the world to that organization. And he would have, if he's not the best Pred of all time, he has to be one of the two or three best to ever put on that uniform.
I think he's the best. It's not even close.
I think he would be, too.
Not even close. For my money, and if somebody on the text line disagrees, I'd love to hear a couple more names. I think you mentioned Shea Weber. He'd probably be at the top of that list, but again, unlike Rinne, didn't play his whole career in Nashville. Same goes for Ryan Suter. Those guys would be very close on that list, and it's funny just because I've been following along a little bit in Nashville in the offseason, because for my money, they're one of the most interesting teams to watch. We've talked a lot about David Poile and what his future looks like. It's clear he's going to stay for at least one more season as that team's GM, and as you say, it probably a situation where he never gets fired. He leaves whenever he wants, but this franchise really has never had a superstar forward.
And they've tried. They tried to go get Johansson. They've made trades before. But you're right. They've never had that guy.
The Capitals for Forsberg. Yep. Never turned out to be a star.
You know who the leading scorer is as a forward in Preds history?
Legwand.
No. Close, though.
Is it Erat still?
No.
I don't know.
And this is not necessarily in a Preds uniform. This is just career totals. But
Jason Arnott?
Scott Hartnell.
Scott Hartnell. I mean,
and again,
spent a lot of time there.
Not a superstar.
No.
Nope.
Good hair, though.
Good player.
Great hair.
Not a superstar.
Great hair. Yeah.
So, curious. Curious what, and Patrick Hornquist is high on that list, too, in terms of points.
I forgot he was there.
In the Preds, and he was a seventh-round pick, funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
So, Pekka Rinne,
yeah, for my money, Pat Longway saying greatest Predator, not even close.
But one of the best teams ever in developing and drafting defensemen.
never could figure it out and get it done when it comes to forwards. No. It's actually crazy to think about. And by the way,
that number 35 right to the rafters at Bridgestone, yeah?
Oh, 100%. Probably that. Number 6 in Shea Weber. In terms of all-time points in a Preds uniform, Legwand is number 1 at 566. Erat Yossi is 3rd. And when it's all said and done, maybe it's Yossi is the best Predator of all time. But yeah, right now I think it's Pekka-Rinne logo.
Defenseman and goalie's pretty good in Nashville.
Yeah.
Vokoun was a good guy there for a while, too.
Yep. Sweet. So, one of the greatest names of all time.
Absolutely. So that's the story in Nashville. And funny enough, former Predator Ryan Suter getting bought out today by Minnesota as well. We'll switch to baseball to finish up headlines today, guys. We were going to talk a bit about the All-Star game going on tonight. It's coming up in about an hour and 10 minutes or so on Sportsnet, and right here on Sportsnet 960. Of course, your 4 Toronto Blue Jays, 3 of them starters, and of course, Bo Bichette getting to play in an All-Star game back where his dad was a star for the Colorado Rockies. But Shai Davidi, our Blue Jays insider, dropping an interesting tidbit when it comes to the Blue Jays and their potential return to Toronto. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that they had submitted a couple proposals that would see them back in Toronto, hopefully by the end of this month. July 30th specifically was when they were looking to get back into this. This from Shai Davidi about 20 minutes ago or so, that the Blue Jays are discussing with the Players Association a two-track plan for a Rogers Center return in which fully vaccinated players are exempt from quarantine and unvaccinated players bubble while in the city. The split approach, part of a proposal to the federal government submitted roughly 3 weeks ago that has already won municipal and provincial approvals. The Blue Jays hoping to receive a national interest exemption that would allow them to return home in time for the July 30th start of a 10-game homestand. We've been on this for a while now, Will. The back and forth of trying to get the Toronto Blue Jays back over the border and back to Rogers Center sounds as though they're trying to get creative with the rules in order to make that happen by the 30th.
Well, in a lot of ways, you kind of have to get creative with the rules if you're going to get past the federal government approval. I think we've had similar approaches even in the NHL. You know, Tampa Bay Lightning players talked about it, that, yeah, it's great we're going to Montreal, we can't do anything.
Yep.
So you have to go that way. This is probably not going to be the most popular opinion, but I think it's complete BS. I mean, just let them play in Toronto. Like, I understand that, you know, we are certainly still in a pandemic. By no means is this thing over, but I do think it's ludicrous they can't play in their home, especially if you are, you know, really all that concerned. You can keep them in a hotel, but as far as I'm concerned, there's over 2/3 of Major League Baseball in terms of each team that has over, what, 80% players vaccinated.
Well, and it's also a two-tiered plan that takes that into account.
I just feel it's silly.
Well, the hope, my hope is that by that time, because what, July 21st is the next time we revisit what's going to happen with the border, and I honestly have no idea what they're going to decide. But the hope is that there'll be an easing of restrictions anyway when it comes to border restrictions and whether or not it's fully closed or not. If they're going to loosen up the restrictions on the border on July 21st, fingers crossed that's what's going to happen personally. And other people have different opinions, and that's fair. I'm not trying to make a political statement here. I'm just saying personally, I think that you could loosen them on July 21st. If that's what happened.
If we're being perfectly honest, people have been crossing the border for the last year.
Well, on this one, with that in mind and with this proposal in mind, it seems like something that you could give a sign off on without a whole lot of PR blowback. It definitely sounds like something that seems pretty darn safe from a public safety standpoint. So I hope this one gets approved, because if you could get the Blue Jays back for a stretch run with limited fans in the stands at the Rogers Center, I think it'd be good for baseball. I think it'd be good for the country. I think it'd be good for morale, everything. So I'm hoping this goes through. It seems pretty darn reasonable to me.
And just a quick note, following yesterday's home run derby as part of the All-Star festivities, it was a pretty popular one, apparently, the most watched home run derby since 2017, averaging 7.1 million viewers across the United States, peaking at 8.6 million viewers. Curious whether those numbers transfer over to tonight, where we'll see Shohei Ohtani getting the start for the American League and also batting leadoff for them. Max Scherzer goes for the NL. Pat, just a quick note on this before we finish up headlines, but this really is going to be all about Shohei Ohtani, correct?
That's the main reason I'm tuning in. And then number two would be the four Blue Jays. And the fact that three of them are starters and then Bo's in as a reserve. I think the coolest story of all is Teoscar. But I'm really excited to see that you're going to get some true Blue Jays representation, not just the old throw-in, oh, we got to get a Blue Jay in there. There are legit four All-Star caliber Blue Jays in there. That's pretty cool to me. So I'll be watching for that as well. And the All-Star game is always fun. Now, all All-Star games suck, but this one at least is watchable. And it actually kind of feels like a baseball game and not an exhibition. So I'm looking forward to it.
I won't be watching. I could care less about All-Star games. It's cool that Ohtani's there, but it's going to be like a 2-1 baseball game. Yeah. See ya.
That's another edition of Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Save up to $18,000 on their selection of executive-driven vehicles. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
And they also just, I said this on Twitter when they came out, the fact they're not wearing their own jerseys is the best
that
part.
That one does bother
me. It's the best part of the All-Star game, and they took that away. Yeah, so
That one's a little frustrating. I will agree with you wholeheartedly there. Big show's underway on this lovely Stampede Tuesday. Logo, Will, and Pat on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.